This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
To the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome in, everybody. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com. Sabres got a nice win yesterday. Jack Quinn finding a little bit of a groove here. Nice to see for him. UB Women, they're on to the Fab Four of the NIT after their comeback win against Rutgers. We will be talking to UB Women head coach Becky Burke in just about a half hour. In a few minutes, though, we'll first touch base with Sal Capaccio, as maybe that's the biggest news of the weekend. The NFL owners' meeting's going down in Florida. And really, Derek, the big thing I've seen right off the top with all of that is the tush push. Again, is sort of the headline for rules changes and such. I was hoping it was going to be more kickoff-related stuff. It seems to be there is really some growing sentiment. I saw Diane Orsini tweet this morning, too, of like there's support to
it's
get it banned.
Suddenly becoming a bit more of a main character, especially within the owners' meetings. Because think about it. Any important thing that has happened throughout the offseason, any sort of meetings of sort where all the teams are congregating together, it's getting more volume.
Yep.
It's making more noise. And I think with the real momentum that it has, unlike in previous years, there's something interesting to it. And I think the biggest reason for more momentum is one of the teams that's the most successful with it has had some vocal opposition against it.
I saw this morning, Sean McDermott's table was a popular congregating spot for a lot of
media
members.
Because, as Jeremy was pointing out, if there's a face for this movement, it might be him.
Yeah.
Because you can go, like, it's one thing for, like, say, like, you're boxing someone and someone just kicks you in the shin. The Packers are the team saying, you can't kick me in the shins. And the Bills, meanwhile, are one of these teams kicking people in the shins, and they're like, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah, we should not do that. It's I think what's fascinating
that's
to
the
me,
thing,
though,
is like,
has been the main thing that McDermott and some of the other coaches have mentioned is injury risk. And yet there is no finite data to this point
the
injury risk.
It's veiled. There's no way that it's the real reason. It's just the one that you could publicly say.
I think there is. I want
someone to just say, it looks like a garbage play. We should stop doing it.
I think it's 50-50.
That's the real reason.
I think it's 50-50.
Someone just does not, like, no one in an important position is willing to say it. It's not my opinion. I'm just saying what needs to be said by them. I want to hear it just so that I can be like, you're sticking with your convictions and I like it.
Small,
I respect
one coach
you for
to be
it.
Like, it's vile. I hate it. It looks gross.
It looks like not real football.
Let's get more, though, on the owners' meetings as WGR's coverage of the NFL owner meetings live from West Palm Beach, Florida with Sal Capaccio is brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. Sal, good morning, my friend. How are we doing?
Pretty good, guys. How are you? Good morning on a nice sunny day here. And what I've learned, I have to refer to, I don't have to, but it's Palm Beach, not West Palm Beach. There is a difference between the two.
Okay.
But it is Palm Beach. But either way, either way it works, I don't care. It's nice and sunny. I'll call it West Palm Beach, which is what I've been doing all week.
What's sunny? What does that mean? I've got gray. Like, he said that, and I'm like, that's just mean.
Yeah.
That is mean.
Yeah,
I tell immediately you what, guys, pointed
at
myself, I'm like,
it was very rainy.
Okay, yeah. I'll take that then.
It was very rainy yesterday, actually. It was overcast and rainy yesterday while we were here, and then today is nice, beautiful Florida sun.
All right, so Sal, right off there, you may have heard me and Derek talking about it. We'll get to the Christian Benford extension signing earlier this weekend, too, and some of the comments made about James Cook. But really, the tush push. It has kind of become the main talking point at the owners' meetings. And Sean McDermott, to Derek's point, maybe is the face of it because of how successful the Bills are with it. What have you been hearing?
There's a lot here, guys, because we know that this has been something heavily debated over the last couple of months, really going into last year after the Eagles started using it so much and being so good at it. The Bills have been very, very good at what's commonly known as the tush push, obviously. And it was proposed by the Green Bay Packers last month or a few weeks ago to ban the tush push. Now, some people think that's because Green Bay couldn't stop it or whatever. You know, I've heard people say, well, it's just petty from an organization that, you know, they're on the wrong end of it. But there is a segment of the league, coaches, GMs, owners, whoever, that believe that this is a play that should not be allowed, including Sean McDermott, who, ironically, his team is really, really good at it because they have Josh Allen. They've done a great job of it. And over the last few weeks, Sean has actually dug in harder and more on being against the play. Now, if it was to not be banned, the Bills would still use it because it's part of the rules. His reasoning, we just spoke to him. We talked to him last night and again this morning. His reasoning is health and safety. He just believes because of the way their bodies are and people are piling up and the way that bodies have to contort and all that, that there's a health and safety issue. Now, there is no data to back that up, and other people, reporters, have brought that up to McDermott. Well, there's no data showing that there's an injury risk, right? McDermott has his own, you know, ways of looking at it and his own data that he's looked at or whatever. I don't want to go into all that because obviously there's different people who do look at it different ways. It's super interesting to me. I asked him specifically, Sean, it's weird, and can you explain to people why your team is so good at it, but yet you're one of the people at the forefront of saying you don't want it? And his reasoning, I actually really respect it, is he's on the competition committee. And his job on the competition committee is not to do what's best for the Buffalo Bills, but to do what's best for the league, and that's why he views it this way.
I do respect that. And Sal, like, that's kind of where I'm at. And I won't speak for Derek here, because we were just talking about kind of, you know, maybe what are some of the other reasons for other teams. For me, I know there's no concrete data to prove that injury risk goes up for the tush push, but I do remember, maybe it was the first or the second year the Eagles started doing it, Jason Kelce complained about it often and how much it beat up his bodies. Mm-hmm. And I know we talked about it during the combine when this kind of first popped up, Green Bay bringing it up, that we've mentioned quarterbacks a lot. I do wonder, though, with how valuable having any offensive lineman is, and you pay your guys quickly. There's usually not great offensive linemen available in free agency. I wonder how many teams are going, we can't risk our center getting hurt on a one-yard play where maybe we can do it any other, you know, variety of ways. Let's just get rid of that because our center's getting beat up, you know what. I wonder if maybe that's a big part of it. Quarterback, of course, maybe the main fixture. But I think center and their injury risk is probably high up there as well.
Okay, no doubt. That is right. It's a good point, but I'm going to extend it out. It's not just the center, guys. It's all the offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. Look how the Chiefs defended the play by diving low at legs, tying everybody up. And can I offer you this? Defensive linemen, because of what they have to do to try and stop the play. So, and all the mass that's going at them as they work low and then get bent backward. I'm just presenting the other side here as McDermott's talking, right? Because I think it's a fascinating discussion. Part of it, too, is McDermott said this. And this part I agree with, which is it doesn't mean you can't just do a quarterback sneak. And teams have been very successful on quarterback sneaks. Tom Brady, guys, there was a stat one time where he was like 95 out of 100 on quarterback sneaks, or even more than that, over in the course of his career. You know, I mean, whatever numbers they were, incredibly successful. Josh Allen would be still very successful and was on quarterback sneaks without someone pushing him. It doesn't take away the quarterback sneak, but this particular play and the way that all that mass is going forward, that is one of the reasons why McDermott's also, you know, where he is, and other people, not just Sean McDermott, it's not just the center, although the center obviously takes a lot of the brunt. But let's remember the Bills, when they were unsuccessful, they didn't go over the center. They went to the left every time, right? Remember that. So how was that's the left guard. That's the left tackle. Deion Dawkins was doing an interview with Colin Cowherd the other day I listened to on the radio, and Deion was talking about the toll it takes on his body. He's a left tackle and how it's tough on him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing. And I do almost like that the league is being proactive to something. Maybe to take a positive spin on this, we're not waiting for a huge injury to happen. We're seeing what's going on. We're listening to our players, the beatings they're taking, and we want to get in front of it rather than react to potentially a massive knee injury. It doesn't have to be.
Well, can I just correct for 1 second? Remember, mm-hmm. It's not the league doing this. This is a proposal from a team.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Right. So it's not the league. The competition committee didn't say, hey, we need to look at this. A team is, but to your point of the league, there is enough support from people around the league and the competition committee to get to the point where we are today, and then it'll be voted on tomorrow. There was a report, there was an article written yesterday on ESPN that said that there was an animated discussion in a hallway between McDermott and Sean McVay and Howie Roseman. And my apologies, the young lady who wrote the article, she works for ESPN, I have to pull that up. I spoke with her, actually, and she was explaining to me what she saw in the hallway, and she said animated, it wasn't in a bad way, but they were obviously, they were talking it, and you could see them very, lively talking. She said animated was not, it wasn't mean, they weren't like going at each other, but it was definitely something they were all passionate about.
I have the article in front of me, it's Kalen Kaher. Of ESPN.
Kalen Kaher, yes, very good. I was just speaking with Kalen a little while ago, yeah. And she actually asked McDermott about it, and he pushed back on, well, it wasn't very animated. And I spoke with her about that exchange, and she said maybe she could use a different word, but she said, but it definitely was, several of the guys were talking quite a bit about it, pretty lively in the hallway.
And I think really the discussion is gaining more and more momentum because I think things came to a head in the NFC Championship game between Philadelphia and Washington where the Eagles suddenly just go, all right, if you're going to jump the snap, we're just going to not snap the football and get awarded a touchdown by penalty if you guys keep doing this. So it does look like things are coming to a head at this point about the style of the variant of this of the quarterback sneak, effectively.
We'll see where it goes, guys. I mean, the way that the rule is written, there was even a question to McDermott today about is it about the super specificity of it of immediately after the snap versus, and I think that there's a lot of things in the weeds they're getting into on this, but we'll see where it goes. Tomorrow morning is the vote on that, as well as several other issues. McDermott's also not in favor of eliminating a first down, automatic first down for illegal contact or defensive holding. Brandon Bean is also not in favor of eliminating that. Brandon Bean said that he believes there are unintended consequences that go along with that, including maybe on a third down and long, a coach instructing his players to hold more, because it's not as penal. Neither of them are for the proposal also brought by Detroit to reseed the playoff teams based on wild card record. If a wild card winner has a better record than the division winner, both McDermott and Bean kind of echoed the same sentiment, which is they believe that you should have a really big, you should have the reward of having a home playoff game if you win your division.
Yeah, and I mean, those two have been vocal about that for years, about first win the division, assure yourself a home playoff game. I'm not too surprised by that. On the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio from Palm Beach, Florida, for the NFL owners' meetings. Sal, we also got news of another Bills extension this weekend. Christian Benford does get a 4-year, $76 million deal. Personally, for me, it did feel like maybe he was going to go on the back burner, that maybe they had missed their window. I was a little surprised to see it pop up, but it's another extension. It's been a busy offseason for the Bills on that front.
Yeah, for sure. So I also agree that I thought maybe they wouldn't be able to get anything done because they had the other three done, and it's really tough to kind of keep doing that with everybody, and where's the money, how much to go around. But you can always play with numbers, obviously, and do it. And the other thing is McDermott's always so good at just not revealing anything about this stuff, keeping things close to the vest. And we didn't know anything about Christian Benford until it came down. And he gets what I think is a really team-friendly deal. He is the 13th highest-paid corner, and I don't think anybody would put him outside the top 12 corners in the NFL. So, based on some of the things we've seen, some of the numbers that are out there, I think he is very deserving of being and getting that kind of money. But this is a deal that's very interesting, which is, because I say it, another deal that's a 4-year extension for a guy that has 1 year remaining. Now, let's count the guys who've done that. Now, I've had 6 extensions this offseason. Josh Allen and Reed Ferguson are 2 of them. The other 4 are all guys who are entering the final year of their deals. Khalil Shakir, Terrell Bernard, Greg Rousseau, and now Christian Benford. And what's interesting about all four of them, it's 4 years added on top of the final year. So they're all now locked up for 5 years, and they all end at the same time. Guys, this is not a coincidence. The Bills would not say this. I don't think Brandon Bean would ever say this. I don't think Sean McDermott would ever say it. I will say it. The Bills are clearly trying to win a Super Bowl over the next 5 years. That's where they believe Josh Allen's window is to be elite and be great and in his prime to win a Super Bowl. And that's why they're making these deals expire when they are.
Sal, that's a really good observation that I like to see there. But also, just as importantly, I think that outside of Bernard, you were looking at really a discount on the other three deals there with Shakir, Rousseau, and with especially with Bernard, on how they managed to be below market value for what they were playing up to.
If you guys want to know, Matt Bove and I just did a Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. So he said this. I don't want to steal his point. It's a great point. If you guys want to know what true value Josh Allen brings to an organization, it's not just being the league MVP and being great. It's because you can do this, which is get people to sign here and stay here for less money than maybe they'd get on the open market. I mean, you can go, if you're Brandon Bean, you go to Khalil Shakir and go, how do you like playing with Josh Allen? Oh, yeah, I love it, right? You can go to Greg Rousseau. Hey, we got Josh Allen. Look around the league. You know, we can have a chance to win here for the next 5 years. Absolutely. Christian Benford, Terrell Bernard, same thing. The greatness of having a guy like Josh Allen is it's a gift that keeps on giving around your organization, because it's not just how great of a player he is. It's that you can now sign players, bring them in because they want to play for you, and you can retain your players probably at a lesser rate because they don't want to go somewhere else and risk not being involved with chasing a Lombardi every year.
Mm-hmm. It is the bonus of being a good to great team in the NFL. Sal, though, one player not given an extension, perhaps yet, maybe never, is James Cook. I know his name came up a lot yesterday when Bean and McDermott were speaking with you guys.
Yeah, I think this might be the story of the week for me here, which is Brandon Bean saying straight out that he does not expect a contract extension for James Cook, quote, anytime soon, end quote. He said they are now focused on the draft, focused on the cap for 2025, and the reasoning is because he said, look, you know, at some point you have to move on, but he gave a timeline of how things have developed. You go back a couple of months ago, he said in the offseason they did have discussions with James' representatives. And or whatever, over the last couple of months at some point. When it became clear that they were not able to get a deal done, they basically then turned their attention to the players who they believe they could get a deal done. And we've seen that with four of them, because James Cook is the last one remaining. James Cook, as we know, has been very public and vocal about the fact that he wants $15 million a year. That's what he's put out there. That's the number he's put out there. He has done that. Brandon Bean has said at the Combine, they like to keep things in-house, but James is a grown man. He can handle business any way he wants. This is not a James Cook personal issue. He once again reiterated how much he loves James Cook, loves Jimbo, wants to have Jimbo here, loves him as part of the offense. He also said just because there's no deal done now doesn't mean it can't get done next year, which is interesting because at the Combine he said just because it's not done now doesn't mean it can't be done, you know, a week from now, a couple months from now. This time he said it means it doesn't mean it can't be done next year. I think this is it, guys. James Cook is going to go into the final year of his contract, and we'll see where it goes. I want everybody to remember, though, the Bills do have leverage at the end of next year because they have the franchise tag or transition tag. If James Cook has another great year and the Bills say, we're going to do whatever we can to not lose him, but we still don't want to pay him that money, they could franchise tag him. And, oh, by the way, the franchise tag this year was only $13 million for a running back, which is less than what he's asking for.
And that might be something that the Bills have looked at where they're like, eh, franchise tag, we'll deal with it. I also, Sal, I look at it too, they've already drafted, they've continued to do what they do with the running back position these last few years, which is they go back into drafts maybe a year or two after drafting somebody, they get another guy. They don't necessarily spend high draft capital, James Cook being the outlier there, second round pick, but they did go and get Ray Davis. They did sign back Ty Johnson. I don't think it'll happen, but let's say, you know, draft weekend on that Saturday, a fourth round pick, they take a running back. I mean, what's the conversations we're having? I don't think the room can really sustain another one, especially a draft pick, but I don't want to say I can't totally see it with how deep this running back class is, or at least it's perceived to be.
No, I understand that, and if they were to draft one, we would have that conversation. But I want to point out to everybody, right now, they have five running backs on the roster. Five. That's not including Reggie Gilliam, the fullback. So five running backs, and all five, ironically, are exactly the same five. And only five they brought to camp last year. James Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, Frank Gore Jr., and Darrington Evans, who was on the roster last year, and then he is again right now. I think it would be very crowded, but you never rule it out. If they really feel this is going to go south with James Cook, they might want to get ahead of it. But again, they have James Cook for another year.
Yeah.
They don't even have to address this until next year if they don't want to in some capacity. The nuclear option is, okay, we got to blow it up. We got to get rid of James Cook. We got to do something. That could lead you down a certain path. But in the meantime, you're like, hey, if he's going to walk next year, then we'll use him up this year. And I just think it's a discussion that, yes, it's very, very interesting. And, yes, it's very notable what Brandon Bean said. But the Bills still have control here over what happens with James Cook. Now, if he decides to miss OTAs and minicamp, great. That players have done that. If all of a sudden he decides to miss training camp, it's $40,000 a day. And from what I understand, reading through, because he's on a rookie contract, that could actually be rescinded once he came back. So that is a play that James Cook has. But we don't want to. The Bills don't want to see that get ugly. I don't think fans want to see that get ugly. We don't want to see James Cook and the Bills being at odds over this. I think if you're a Bills fan and want to get this thing eventually resolved. The thing they haven't done at running back, guys, they have drafted guys in the second round, James Cook. They have drafted guys in the third round. Devin Singletary, I think was Devin a third or maybe a fourth. Zach Moss, right? The one thing they have not done, they have not given a contract extension to a running back after his rookie deal.
And I think
they haven't done it.
I think you can argue, though, too, Sal, like Cook is maybe the first guy that you can have that conversation about, that maybe it is like it's a tougher sell where – previously it would have been maybe easier to let go of these guys. 16 touchdowns and, seemingly getting better in terms of his yards per carry every year. I can understand maybe if the Bills are having a hard time either moving off from or if they want to pay for him because they haven't up
to
this point.
This is a great point you're bringing up because I think Zach, when I'm on, when you're on, when Derek's on, when Jeremy and Joe and Chopin the Bulldog and people are calling and we get all these tweets, I think what's happened with this conversation for a lot of people is they've kind of had to separate it between they either want him or they don't. That's not what the Bills want. James Cook. I want to tell you right now, the Bills want to re-sign James Cook. They want James Cook in a Buffalo Bills uniform. The only question is value. Mm-hmm. That's the question. Mm-hmm. This is not they just want to get rid of him. That is not what's happening here. So when you see, he's not going to get a contract extension, that's not code for we really don't like James Cook and we're going to move on from him. No. It's the opposite. They want James Cook, but the Bills have a value on James Cook, and James Cook has a value on himself, and he's earned that right, and the Bills have earned that right. So they have to come to some sort of resolution in one way or the other, or maybe he's playing for another team in 2026. But this is not a case. I think it becomes a case of black and white with a lot of people, which is it's either one way or the other. They want him or they don't. That's not the case. The Bills want James Cook. It's the question of how much the value is for James Cook.
I wouldn't even say necessarily the value sale. I might just say, can we afford him or not? And that's more of a black and white at that point based on the value, which has the gray area. So it is more intricate, but I do think it's more of, are we able to afford him based on the value?
Maybe a little bit, sure. Of course, you're always going to make concessions. Yeah, I agree with that. You have to make concessions somewhere. But the Bills will have a certain value where they believe if James Cook's willing to sign, I think that they would do whatever they should to make that work, if that makes sense, right? You definitely want to make sure you can't sign everybody. Everybody says you can't re-sign everybody, no doubt about it. And you have to have the money. And maybe he's squeezing himself out because they're already giving these extensions out, Derek, to your point, right? But I think overall, it's if James Cook, I don't know what the Bills value James Cook at. Let's just say it's $10 million. If James Cook went to them tomorrow and said, all right, I'll sign for $10 million, I think they would find the money some way, right? I think they would work to find the money to make that happen. It's going to be really interesting to see how this develops.
Sal, last thing, not football related, baseball. Torpedo bats, Yankees, a lot of home runs. How do you feel?
I feel like I do about the tush push, which is, all right, you ready? This is either going to be where everyone does it or it's going to get banned.
It's exactly
the torpedo
what
bats.
I'm thinking. Me and my brother had the exact same conversation where we're like, by the end of April,
I think it's fascinating.
May, people are going to be using the bats or they're gone.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, before I go, though, guys, I know we got a couple minutes here. If you don't mind, I'd like to direct everybody to WGR550.com. I had a really in-depth one-on-one interview with Bills and Sabres COO Pete Guelli, and we touched on a lot of topics. And if I could just have a couple minutes here to kind of just go over a couple things that he says, I think mm-hmm. it's very important to our listeners. First of all, PSL sales, he said 70% of the lower bowl is sold. All the premium seats are sold out. The suites are basically sold out, and they're very on track with their pacing to what they believe will be a sold out, Highmark Stadium when it opens in 2026. That being said, it won't just be the Bills opening up Highmark Stadium in 2026. He said that next summer. They're looking at what they can do to have something before that, because they don't just want to have a, you know, go in cold with the Bills. So that sparked a lot of people wondering, what kind of concert could they bring in? Could it be lacrosse? Could it be soccer? Those are all things on the table, by the way, that he said. No doubt about that. So that's really interesting. The last piece of steel is going in on April 4th, which, by the way, is my birthday. So let's go down and celebrate my birthday and the last piece of steel going in on the stadium. So there's going to be like 2,000 people at what I'm going to call my birthday party down there, right? Whatever it is, thousands of people. But you get the point. It's going to be a good day. It's the last piece of steel. And then from there, they'll do all the things that they needed inside the stadium and the bowl and all that kind of stuff going forward. We also know the Bills are very much in contact with both the NFL and the NHL to bring the NFL draft to Buffalo, which Pete Guelli said he believes is happening. He thinks 2029 is pretty realistic. Don't rule out 2028, but they're very aware the Bills want it. The Bills are sending a contingent to Green Bay to see how they do it this year. So I would expect an NFL draft to be in Buffalo in 2028 or more likely 2029. And either a Winter Classic or Stadium Series game, which is now part of the outdoor series they do, not just the Winter Classic. Yes, the 20th anniversary is coming up, which would fit perfect for the Bills to host that and the Sabres to play in that stadium. But because of the Bills' schedule and not knowing that, it could just be a Stadium Series game. That being said, arena downtown, that's also going to be something that they're focusing on and looking at, which is Pete Guelli is very passionate about the development of the downtown area and the fact that KeyBank Center is a destination for people to go, and how, yes, the Sabres are the main tenant and the main draw, but there's the Bandits, obviously. There's college basketball, which is coming next year for the NCAA tournament, the first two rounds. I thought his quote was very interesting. He said, we want Buffalo to be a college basketball destination. You'll love that, Zach. Mm-hmm. He said they've talked with people at the national level. They talk with all the local teams. They really want to enhance the college basketball experience downtown. And they're also, so around that area and in the arena, they're also talking about more enhancements. But, you know, he wouldn't get into what they have planned right now. Finally, I know a big buzz for everybody is third jerseys, right? Alternate uniforms, helmets, all those things people love to talk about. Look, I get it. I got a lot of people upset yesterday when I tweeted out, don't expect anything this year. They're going to be looking at more like combination stuff this year. Then next year when the new stadium opens, that's when they have some things planned for the uniforms. But I understand Pete Guelli's point here, which is this year is really going to be a lot of the focus on the old stadium, the current stadium, the memories in that stadium, 50-plus years, all the different ways they want to celebrate that stadium. That's where their focus is now. And they might do some things with throwbacks or Standing Buffalo this year. We'll see. But anything really radical or changes in some sort, probably waiting till next year when the new stadium opens.
All right, Sal, thank you so much. We got to run. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
That was Sal Capaccio live from Palm Beach, Florida for the NFL Owners Meeting, and WGR's coverage of the NFL Owner Meeting with Sal Capaccio was brought to you by Window Nation, the perfect fit for your home and wallet. Visit windownation.com. We got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, UB Women's head coach for basketball, Becky Burke, joins the show as the women's team is on to the Fab Four in the women's NIT. We'll get her thoughts on that historic accomplishment for the program after a quick time out. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you will find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. A lot of interesting pieces there from Sal Capaccio, who is covering the NFL owners' meetings down in Palm Beach, Florida. Before we get to any of that, though, UB women head coach Becky Burke has been on the show a number of times this season. They've had a wonderful season, 20-plus wins this year. They're in the NIT. They're still in the NIT following their win against Rutgers yesterday at home, 71-64. And with that, we go to the Western Hotline as head coach Becky Burke joins the show. Coach, congratulations on the continued run this season.
Thank you. It's been really exciting, and we're happy to keep it going.
And on that, I mean, you've had some exciting games. The first one against UMass goes to overtime. You guys were down yesterday at half. It's been a wild ride. Those two games, by the way, as well, were at home, and now you guys are in the Fab Four. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been really, really just cool to see our team just fight and battle and play some different teams from some different conferences and ultimately be 3-0 so far in this tournament. So, yeah, it's been really fun and exciting. And obviously the city and our fan base have been excited with us. So it's been awesome.
So- So it is the NIT. It's the longest postseason run the UB women's program has had, I believe, since 2018 when they went to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. Was there at any point with this group that you guys have a little bit of bitterness of not making the NCAA tournament? It was such a successful regular season. Again, 20-plus wins, and you guys had historic beginnings to that season. Or was this just right away, no, let's go win this. Let's go try to get a championship here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I wouldn't say bitterness. Obviously, disappointment. You want to play in the NCAA tournament. That's your goal every year. And, you know, that's priority number one, is to make sure you put yourself in a position to play in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, if you don't get into that, there's so much good basketball still to be played, including the WNIT. And so, you know, I think you could argue it's a WNIT championship or a first-round exit in the NCAA tournament. You know, what would you rather have? I think people would probably be split on that. So it's a big deal that we're in the Fab Four of this tournament, and something that we're thankful for and appreciative of, and no letdown once this tournament started. It was full speed ahead. Like, let's try to still go win a championship, and hopefully here in about a week we can say we did that.
Here's to hoping, absolutely, Coach. And also, being able to play in front of the home crowd yesterday and having that passion there, what was the emotions like for the team as you guys had to scrape back a little bit and then dominate in the fourth quarter?
Our fans and the home court environment yesterday was absolutely nuts. And it's been like that all year for us. It's our support this year. And, you know, obviously our winning ways these last couple of years have made people come out and be excited about our team. And yesterday it was truly the difference. You know, even in our game against UMass when we were able to host, it was the difference. And the city of Buffalo has shown up for us, and we're so appreciative of that. But the fan support has been a huge factor. And I think you could ask the visiting teams and you could ask our team in terms of just how much it's meant to us. So it's been incredible. We're so thankful. We're so appreciative. And hopefully another opportunity to host another game this week is the news that we get. And that's what we're hoping for, because it does make such a big difference.
That was going to be one of my questions, Coach, as well. It's either Purdue Fort Wayne or Cleveland State. I was wondering if there was still a chance we get another game at Alumni Arena. I wanted to go yesterday. I saw head coach of the football team, Pete Lembaugh, went. And I'm like, I should have went. I knew I should have gone. My afternoon had opened up and I didn't. And that's my bad. It's totally, Derek's holding up his hand. I am at fault for this. It is his fault.
We had some plans. So I'm at fault. So I do apologize for both of us here.
No worries. And if we get the host, you can make it up by coming to the next one. So there is definitely a chance we get the host. And so if we do, hopefully we can break the other night's record of attendance and keep pushing forward in this tournament, because with the help from you guys and everybody in the community who's been so great.
And so on tonight, I mean, when it comes to these matchups, especially these basketball tournaments, it is between Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Cleveland State. Do you and your coaching staff, I'm not going to, you know, ask if you guys have any rooting interest, but are you guys kind of locked in all together watching the game at 7, or is it more you wait to see who wins and then you go to the tape?
No, we were prepping for both ways, you know, so whoever wins, we will be fully prepared for, and then we'll just clean up that last game and make sure we're ready for it. So, we're ready for whoever wins. Both assistants are already working on their scouts and hopefully finishing those up today. And so we're prepared nonetheless.
And then, Coach, one last thing for me, just on this run, at what point did it stop kind of just being like it's postseason basketball, and does it kind of turn the page to let's go win a championship here, let's go hang a banner, let's bring a trophy into Alumni Arena? Because the Fab Four, of course, but, you know, whenever I listen to college basketball, or it's always based off of Final Four appearances, right? And this is in that same vein. At this point, does it become, you know, it's not just nice to be here, let's go win this thing?
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, that first game, you're like, okay, let's see what we can do in this tournament. Let's see if we can win the first one. You know, you win the second one, now you can start to smell it. You win the Elite Eight game, now you're like, okay, championship is within our reach. And that's what we've talked about. And you know, winning yesterday, it's just like, you don't come this far to come this far. So I think we're at the point now for sure, being one of the final four teams left, that we believe we can win a championship, and just makes them more excited to come to practice every day, because it's been a long season. You know, it's been a really, really long season. And, you know, just to keep them focused, I think that's really, really cool that they could win a championship.
Not just win a championship. One of the fascinations with college athletics is there are not many teams that get to go out on a win. And being in the NIT here, it gives you an opportunity to go out on top and be able to go out with a win. What would that be able to feel like, having something genuinely rare within college athletics?
It would be incredible. I think this is still a really prestigious tournament and still really, really good for our program and our university. And we don't do anything not to win. So no matter what tournament we would be in, we'd be excited to have an opportunity to win a championship and something that these players can say they did. And nobody can take that from them. And I think that's the important thing.
Coach, actually, I lied. I do have one other thing that I want to bring up because I'm a stickler for free throws. This is coming from somebody that cannot shoot a basketball. So, like, there is something there. But I am always impressed when I see a team stat of like above 85% shooting free throws. You guys were 90% yesterday, scoring 29 in the fourth quarter. The closing speed that team showed yesterday, I think, is so, so impressive.
Yeah, no, we stepped up and knocked them down when we needed to. And we live at the free throw line. So if we don't knock those down, those are points we're giving away. And we made sure that we stepped up. We've really been shooting a ton of free throws this week, knowing that we could be aggressive against Rutgers. And so I'm happy that it showed on the stat sheet for us.
Absolutely. Coach, good luck the rest of the way. We'll be watching to see who wins tonight, Purdue 4-way and Cleveland State, to see if we can have another game at Alumni Arena. But even if we don't, you guys are in the Fab Four. It's unbelievable. Congratulations on this run.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys.
That was UB Women's Head Coach Becky Burke there on the West Her Hotline. And speaking of the free throw line and kind of living and dying by that, if anyone watched the men's tournament, Florida-Texas Tech, mm-hmm. Florida wins that game 84-79, partially because Texas Tech threw it away by not making the free throws. Oh. They ultimately go from the line 7 of 13, good for 53.8%. Florida, 25-27, 92.6%. And we mentioned it there. UB, the best quarter of basketball point-wise was
ridiculous.
29 points, and they were doing a lot of that, as Coach Burke said, from the free throw line. That shows a good team that can close out games.
You're drawing a chance to get points off of tough D, mm-hmm. maybe too tough of D, maybe sometimes not.
Yeah.
Either way, if you're hitting 90% of your free throws, that's
tie
a
win
boon
games.
For success.
Tie you win games. Yeah.
It can cost you, because ready? They're called free throws. You get them uncontested for free. You had to earn them, so I don't know why they're called free throws. You did have to earn them, but they're still there.
They're points for
you to just acquire.
There's nothing that kills me more watching basketball. I don't watch a ton of NBA until the playoffs. I watch a lot of college basketball than having a guard walk up to the free throw line and I see their free throw percentage is like in the 70s. I'm like, what are you doing? Come on, man. Like, you're not Shaq. That's one thing. I get it. 7 foot tall guy. I get it. Whatever. 6'1", you got to hit those. And UB did it at a really good pop. On the NCAA tournament, though, we spoke of the men's thing. I do want to bring this up. All 4-1 seeds to the Final Four. Just the second time ever since we've gotten to this modern bracket. I believe 84, 85. And it's been chalky. It's Sal mentioned I'm a huge college basketball junkie. I love good basketball. I like when the good teams actually do have great seasons.
But this
I
is too much
that.
One seeds for you?
This is too much one seeds for me, yeah. Because I thought Auburn was playing bad to end the year. They lost three of their last four. Mm-hmm. They didn't look particularly good, and then they went on a run. Duke is considered almost historically great, depending on who you ask. Houston has been here forever,
and then
Florida's awesome.
There's a narrative that is forming, and we do have to be careful about this, of like, is NIL and the transfer portal mm-hmm. killing college basketball? The problem with that narrative is this is the first time this happened since, what, 2008?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So I pointed out how 07 was one of the most boring tournaments. When it came to it was too chalky.
Mm-hmm.
And 08 did the same thing. I don't think there was any problems with complaining about it back then. So it has to be a trend. It has to stick around in order for there to be a real problem with NIL and transfer portal for that to be an issue.
Yeah.
The other thing is that in the women's tournament for the NCAA, same thing has happened. Not the same exact thing, but like ones, twos, and there's this 1-3 seed in there. So
I also would like to point out that when we did have a really aggressively different seeded Final Four, it wasn't watched as much.
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic, San Diego State, Miami, and UConn from 2 years ago.
I will say personally, like, I love when there's chaos thrown into a bracket and mm-hmm. even deep into it. Those are the things that I love watching for in the tournaments, the things that you say that people don't. I'm watching for that. Yep. I want to see a Loyola Chicago hanging around in the Final Four. I want to see Butler be introduced as a solid mid-major school that establishes a presence within the Elite Eight on a consistent basis. I want to see teams like that, that we don't know the names of, hanging around the Elite Eight, threatening for the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the NIT, the women's NIT, we looked at this morning. There are not a lot of UB in this, let alone a Purdue, Fort Wayne, and Cleveland State.
Mm-hmm.
So that means one of those two teams is going to make a finals appearance in the women's NIT.
Yeah,
and there's not a lot of those in the history either. I love the chaos. I love that kind of an underdog story. And just to tie it back in to the coach here and talking with her, I hope that it's UB that ends up playing for a championship, because you don't see many of those names hanging around at the end of it all.
No, and it's why I brought up to the hanging a banner, having a championship. I think that'd be huge. I think that would be massive. I think of programs like St. Bonaventure, who they made the Final Four in 1970 before the tournament kind of became the tournament. They weren't even seeding teams at that point yet, or to the modern sense that we see it. But that's still a banner you see in there, and I think it'd be the same thing for the women's program, who has had deep runs in the NCAA tournament, have done really well with the transition from Felicia Legat-Jack to, of course, Coach Becky Burke. And then and I loved your point too of not many teams, especially in college basketball. College football, you can win a bowl game and feel good.
College basketball, you can, like, the UB football team wins in the Bahamas, by the way.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if there's a better way to cap off your season other than being the national champion than that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like in college basketball, very rarely do you get teams that get to land on their feet at the end of it, brush themselves off, and say, "We won our last game."
Yeah.
It is not a common thing.
Because even these 16 seeds that go out, win their conference tournament, maybe even win a first four game, and you're like, oh, this is great. Then they get blown out by a one seed. And that's the closing note on your season. Like, that can suck at times.
It's going to suck at times. Mm-hmm. There's accomplishments along the way, and you end up proud looking back. But if you play a game, if you have any sort of competitive juices in your DNA, and those athletes do, your last game played, possibly even for a senior ever, will be defeat. And that will hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We will know who UB faces later tonight. Again, Purdue, Fort Wayne, or Cleveland State. They play at 7 p.m. And I believe then that game, the Fab Four game, will be on Wednesday. Location yet to be determined. We are open up now the rest of the way. Do you want to jump into some of the stuff Sal was talking about at the owners' meetings? A lot, too, on James Cook. I find the idea of franchise tag even being brought up in a bean management with the Bills is super fascinating. We'll jump in on that. But if you want to join the conversation, 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Got some kind of cool, like, college football news. If you don't know, Andrew Luck is the general manager of Stanford football. Yes, the former Colts quarterback. After retiring, he's now gotten back into the administration side of it.
More importantly, the former Stanford quarterback.
Yes, the former Stanford quarterback. They fired their head coach, Troy Taylor, not that long ago, which is very late in the cycle. We're into spring ball and stuff like that. Like, it's not a good thing. So to retroactive that and kind of make up for it and kind of, you know, give themselves a safety blanket, we have interim coaches for a season now, as former NFL head coach, former Bills quarterback Frank Reich has signed a one-year deal on an interim basis to be the Stanford Cardinals head coach.
How do you got to feel if you're one of the students? Transfer
weird.
Portal closed.
Weird.
Coach
yeah.
is fired. Frank Reich's your coach now for a year. Have fun.
I mean, there is a part of, though, it's like, all right, he's an NFL coach. Wasn't terrible. I know a lot of people liked him a lot and didn't think he got a fair shake. I get
yeah.
it. Especially Carolina. But I think this is also like the new landscape where it's like NIL is going to kind of help you. It is going to allow you to maybe do something like this.
It's also Stanford, though.
It is Stanford.
It's not what I would call an NIL-rich idea yet.
Yet, yes, because I know that's been a big thing with Andrew Luck is wanting to really do what Notre Dame does, which is we have great alumni. And our NIL, while yes, it's going to be money, it's going to be more connections. Yes. And that's Notre Dame's big thing. They have the money, of course, but it's also we have the alumni base that when you get out of here, let's say your football career, basketball career, whatever, doesn't go the way you want, we've got the connections.
We've at least got the people to help you.
Yeah, and that seems to be what Notre Dame's building. I think it's what Stanford wants to build as well.
Yes.
But and kind of cool to see Frank Reich back in like the head coaching ranks.
Yeah. A general manager, still a weird concept, but hey, you know what? Here we go.
I'm all for it. It used to just be the main booster. Now it's a former quarterback that went number one overall and retired suddenly. I'll never forget that. I was by a campfire with a bunch of friends, and all of our phones started going off, and we're like, we're not getting punked, right? Andrew Luck's really retiring the season after having his career best year, and the Colts finally seem to get it right. Absolutely insane. 803-0550, the number to call. We already mentioned we want to get into some stuff from the NFL owners meeting, namely James Cook. Also want to touch on the Sabres as well. 8 goals yesterday. Jack Quinn, maybe he's finding himself a little bit. We know Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen not really finding himself much. We'll talk on a lot of that stuff here in hour number two after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.